I had read in one of our gardening books that the best spot is sheltered from the wind and get lots of direct sun. Much to the amusement of our family and friends, we used to buy beautiful books on gardening, even though we did not have an inch of outdoor space. Rick loves to quote Walt Disney, and he reminds me all the time, if you can dream it, you can do it. I don't know about you, but I'd like to see where that goes. Hey, it's Drew from 99.3 Moose FM, West Nipissing's best music, and welcome to Fascinating People. For those that are new to the show, it's a very simple concept. I ask people around the West Nipissing area to come in and tell me their story for 30 minutes, or more or less, depending on how long their story takes. Doesn't matter who it is, because it is the firm belief here in the studio that everybody is fascinating. They just have to tell you why. And our subject today is Nandita Colbert of Literacy Alliance of West Nipissing. And I was just reading from her book, It's Okay to Cry in the Garden. We actually discuss a little bit about this book, but the majority of this episode doesn't even have to do with West Nipissing. We go to Nandita's home country, discuss how she learned the skills that she then carried to Canada. Not going to spoil the whole thing for you. It's her story. We're going to let her tell it. And before we do that, just want to remind you, if you know somebody that could be a fascinating subject, or you yourself would be a great guest to this show, send me an email, drew@moosefm.com. Now, without further ado, let us welcome Nandita Colbert to Fascinating People.
Well, I'd like to welcome everybody to this show. Moose FM has been perfect in our community, and I am thrilled to sit here with Drew and share some experiences.
I've never been called perfect. My heart is bursting now. Well, thank you so much for taking time to chat with us, Nandita. You were, I think, the first contact I ever had in West Nipissing just because of the word of the week.
Correct.
It was, as soon as I started here, Steph LaRouche sent me an email saying, okay, first thing you got to do is get the next month of words from Nandita. Here's her email, so just send her a quick one. And since then, it's pretty much been the constant back and forth between us.
That's so correct. And it's been such a lovely tie-in promoting the concept of literacy through words. And words are all we have anyway.
I mean, that's kind of what we're using today, too. And we'll get a little bit more into Literacy Alliance in a bit. But first, I'd like to know a little bit more about you, because I don't think you and I have actually had a nice... It's all been professional. We've never had a nice just chat between the two of us.
I don't think anybody has. It'll be a first for both of us.
Oh, there we go. It's exciting.
So where do we begin this journey? It's
Where were you born?
Well, I was born in India, and it was in the north. And I grew up there. So up to my early 20s, my life has been in one country only. No travels, just India. I was in my, I was finishing high school when my parents made that decision to leave India. My dad was in the army and he decided he was going to take early retirement, and they moved to Africa right after I graduated. And so I entered university and my parents moved to another country. And that was our first experience of leaving India.
That was your first, so you went to Africa and came back?
So once I entered university, I would, in the summer months when there was no school, I started the journey of flying to Kenya to spend the summer with my parents before returning to school in the fall.
Oh, so you were by yourself while taking school?
Yes, at university it was.
Of course.
Yeah, it was a live-in situation, and now we're talking across the cultural divide. And there was lockdowns and everything. Female residents only. Mm. And yes, so I have lots of family in India. So my grandparents and aunts and uncles and cousins and so on and so forth. But I lived in residence, and yeah, I stayed at university. And just went home or went to Kenya to visit my parents in the summer.
And what were you taking?
So I was headed for medical school.
Okay.
And at the last minute, that didn't happen. And I went to university with my girlfriend, who is a history major, always knew she was going to do that. And I asked them what seats were left. And they said, well, we have literature and philosophy. So from science and math, I went, okay, I'll take the seat. So so I went in to major in English honors and minor in philosophy.
And, well, you've certainly used that degree at this point. Is there anything that kind of stands out from your time at university? Because when I took radio, I took it in college. There was just this moment where they finally put us on air to do our own material, and it kind of clicked for me. I said, okay, I know, this is what I want to do. So you just, on a whim, took this literature class. What was the moment that you said, all right, I'm going to continue this?
I think culturally, it's really a land where in those years, females were not encouraged into education. Our goal was to be married off. And I resisted that since I was 13 or 14. If there was a discussion about an arranged marriage, or I somehow knew that wasn't for me. And so if I dropped out of university, my only option would have been to have the family arrange a marriage for me, because women didn't work. So that was not open. So my conviction was, I got to finish this program before I'm asked again. My parents were very liberal. They supported my need for education. And that's why I said to you, I was headed for medical school, but it's a very competitive industry and they had only so many seats. And I was planning to enter medicine through the Army program. Anyway, as it turns out, my best friend from high school was a history major at the same university. So we were roommates and had a lot of fun. And I think literature was just, I love reading. I've always loved reading. Even as a kid, I had my nose in many books. And so it was just a natural extension. And I won't say I was an excellent student. I kind of bungled my way through university. At that stage, though, I realized that I completely adored the communication. And so after I finished my university degree, I entered a program called Mass Communication. So it's a post-grad program.
Okay.
And that included broadcasting, advertising, marketing, and that was my mother was a journalist.
Oh, really? I don't think I ever asked why they moved to Kenya.
Oh, that was an interesting story. My dad's brother was with Air India, so he got free passes to fly around wherever. And so on one of his trips, his brother was stationed at the airport in Nairobi. And so he went to visit his brother. And while he was there, he got talking with some businessmen. My dad's an engineer and a brilliant mind. Somehow they got talking and somebody made him a job offer. Now in the Army, you have everything but no money. Mm. So you're dollars poor, but you have housing and you have help and you have food. And I guess he found it very attractive, the offer. And I wasn't part of the discussion. But then when he came back to India, I guess mom and he must have talked. And they decided that it was worth exploring. And he was going to fly back and look at it a bit more. And I guess the plan was also that let me graduate high school. And then the two of them would look at possibly exiting.
Okay.
And that's how it went.
And they looked at it, they liked it, and
loved it. And that's how he ended up working there. Awesome inventions in environmental and energy saving things. That's another story for another time.
I'm sure we'll get there. We got to this by talking about your mother was a journalist, and that's kind of what pushed you.
Well, she was. She wrote for some papers all through. And it caught my attention through literature, knowing that she was a fairly successful female journalist, I decided to join Mass Communications. And there I was exposed to writing. But I'm not sure what the programs are called in Canada, but we had to do broadcast journalism, so we had to go out interview. We had television. We had to do television series, radio broadcasting, newspaper journalism, and that was all part of the curriculum. There was actually a studio.
Wow.
At school.
Last time I was at Canada, they were separate. You took TV or radio or journalism.
Yeah, this goes back 30 years almost
Fair.
Or more, right? It was a different time. And even television was black and white, and it wasn't that well known in our country. But something there caught my attention, and it was the marketing component of the program. I found myself entrenched in the concept of marketing and advertising. And that was the area that I excelled in most of all. Not writing, not radio, not TV. But the marketing side had my attention. And that's where my life went from there on.
So you graduate, did you graduate?
I graduated from the program. And in fact, there I did well, much better than my degree in literature and philosophy. Philosophy was great, lots of coffee, but the marks were average.
The passion wasn't there.
But what awakened me was the concept of marketing.
So you graduated from university and...
And then I did my postgrad in mass communications.
Right.
And then at that point in time, the crossroads happened. Family was not willing to let me go on to do more education. I was exploring the concept, maybe a PhD in marketing. No, now you're getting too old. You're past the marriageable age.
Oh, yes.
And so now you have to return to the family fold. So at that point in time, I moved to Africa to live with my parents. And
were your parents not as... You said they were liberal, so they weren't as gung-ho as, say, the rest of your family in India?
Yes, my grandparents were pretty upset with my parents for allowing me this type of freedom of not getting married at 16, 17, 18, 19, 20, 21, 22, 23, and so on. But at that point, everybody put their foot down, including my grandparents, that no more schooling. So there was only one option. There were two options. Let's get you married off, or you go live with your parents. And that's what I ended up doing. So I left India and moved to Kenya to live with my parents. In all of this, there's a little bit of sadness. I was never happy with India.
Was it the culture itself?
It was poverty and richness. The divide was so huge.
The lack of middle class.
You have the poor and the poor, and then you have the haves, which my family fell into. Nicely, they were a working family, both sides. My mother's side, my grandfathers were all doctors of medicine. My mom's generation was the first one to break away from it. The generations, hundreds of years of practicing doctors. And on my father's side, it was always engineers, accountants, pilots, you know, all working people. I found the status of women and poverty to be in conflict with my inner self. And that was why I think I resisted everything all of the time. And I was a militant, fighting person inside, quiet on the outside. I've always been an introvert. I just didn't fit in that cultural divide. But I towed the line, did what needed to be done to stay sane. One of the things that was a defining moment for me, and nobody really in my family understands. I could not understand how we had a female prime minister, Indira Gandhi, yet women had no status. We couldn't vote. Rape was not a criminal offense in those years. It was just okay. And the list goes on. And so when I left for Nairobi in 85...
This is after you moved in with your parents?
This was when I left to go move in with my parents in Africa. I never returned.
Have you spoken with any family from India since you left? No, really?
I left in 85, lived in Kenya with my parents for a couple of years, and we knew it wasn't going to work. My dad and I, we have fought like cats and dogs all of our lives. We just... You know, he's a strong military man with some set ideals on how things have to be done. And I am exactly his daughter with the same stubborn gene. So my poor mother was like this ping pong ball of peace between the two.
Constant mediator.
So no, I didn't go back to India. And it wasn't by choice. This was well before the days of texting and emails. And, you know, I used to handwrite, though. I wrote letters every week to my grandparents, my aunts. And that communication continued till they passed away. So, okay. Yes, there was a lot of communication, but not verbal, not on the phone, because it didn't exist. There were no cell phones.
But it wasn't so much of a detachment, like you couldn't talk. It's just you had to work with what was available at that time.
That's right. And my family, I was fine with. It was the cultural divide. I just could not handle walking to the temple and having the beggars on the street. And it just happened. I just thought, that's it. I can't deal with it. I'm not going back. So I lived in Nairobi with my parents, and then...
Your father and you butted heads a few times.
And we felt, in my heart, I felt that it wasn't fair on him, my mother, or I. It was also my first experience in working. I started my own company and in no time had a lot of success in advertising and marketing.
And this was in Africa?
In Africa, in Nairobi. There was three or four or five companies that I took. The first project was actually for a not-for-profit with the Aga Khan Foundation in Nairobi. They had a big trade show coming and they needed someone to put together a package for it. And so somehow my mother brought it to my attention. I went for the interview, signed up with them to do it as an independent. And so that was the start of my first time in working. And that project went really well. And if you know, it's a small, well-connected community, the Aga Khans. And then through that, it just somebody else called, go meet them. Okay, I have a product. Sales are down. Can you look at it? And with fresh eyes right out of school and a passion for marketing, the energy, and I always had a good sense with numbers. Finance, et cetera, was never an issue for me. Math was not an issue. That took off. And so I was doing very well, but I was also traveling. So then another company, I've got a resort in Mombasa and their sales are down. Can you go there? My parents were pretty open with that. They didn't have an issue with me. And they knew everybody. It's a small Indian community in Nairobi. Everybody knew everybody. So, you know, the gentleman, the owner would call my dad and say, hey, I heard your daughter did a great job for so-and-so. Is she available to come consult with my firm? Okay, went there. My parents were fine. There was no issue with that aspect. And I had to get my driver's license. Just talking about. And that led me to have a lot of fun. And know that it was something I enjoyed, marketing and advertising, taking failing companies and helping them turn around. That was awesome, but then we were still butting heads at home.
So then at some point you got, I'm assuming, much more successful. Were you able to make your own company out of this?
Yes, it was called NB Consulting, but here's the push. I wanted to move out and have my own place. My parents wouldn't agree.
Really?
Culturally, it's a slap in the face. Your daughter leaves home for marriage, not for work.
Oh, and like you said, the stubbornness of your father.
Well,
maybe
it's cultural.
Cultural.
That's any Indian male of that generation would be devastated if their daughter left outside of marriage. How would they face the community? What would they say? Can they not afford their own daughter? Can they not provide a dowry for her? All of those things. So my brother, younger than me, who was living in Nairobi by then, had gone to army school. He'd got he was doing his ACCA, pursuing accounting. He said to my parents, well, what if the both of us moved out? You had to be there.
So I'm assuming you and your brother got along fairly well?
Yes, very well. We were good friends. And he's just 3 years younger than me. And so then we talked about there was an opportunity for me to do some project work in Mombasa, which is 5-6 hours from Nairobi. And so my brother and I approached my parents and said, well, what if we went there and you could use the excuse that both of them found work and they're living there now? Not acceptable.
Really? Did they give a reason why?
Cultural.
It's still the cultural divide.
Yes, because what will the people say? That they have left their parents' home. Like my brother, yes, sure. It's a male thing, no problem. But he wasn't interested in moving. He was doing it for me. He was happy at home, rent-free. So at that point in time, we really did have a lot of conversations about this isn't going to work. I mean, you know, by then I was probably 23, 4, maybe going on 25 by then. No, 24. So we started talking about what if I left the country altogether? What if I went to Australia? What if I? And we knew there was no choice. My mind was made up that this isn't working. I'm not willing to step into an arranged marriage. What options are there? So we decided, okay, well, you know, I could run away or let's do this in a good way. So I started checking out the different high commissions to figure out where I could find myself a way to exit into another country. So Australia was right at the top of the list. And I was avoiding Europe because we have a lot of family in Europe. So
don't want to do that again. No, you got rid of that.
No, got rid of that idea. I don't want to jump into it because then they're like, oh, but you can go live with so-and-so. But you, no. So it was an interesting fluke that led me to the Canadian High Commission, and the rest, as they say, is history. Within 9 months, 10 months, I had my landed immigrant status, and I waited till the last few days before it expired to make my journey to Canada, and that was in March of 87.
Now, in my mind, I'm thinking, like, you waited till it expired because, oh, I can't go back.
Well, hey, everybody kept telling me that I can't go back, but it's too cold in Canada. It's too cold in Canada, so you better wait till the spring. So I was waiting for spring, but my visa would expire March 24th, I believe, or 25th of 87, and I'd had it for 9 or 10 months, and then there was the whole planning process. I knew nobody. There was no one to go to. How would I survive? I had to save money. I had to save money for an airline ticket. So there was a lot of things that had to be dealt with before I could make this journey. And so it was right at the end, okay, spring is here, I gotta go. I had always planned on going to Montreal because at that point in time, I was bilingual, French and English. And I worked at the Alliance Française there, and I also led a lot of safaris with French tourists. So it was the Canadian High Commission in Nairobi that convinced me that Toronto would be a better fit for me than Montreal. And they believe that even though you're bilingual, it's your fifth or sixth language. So to get into advertising and marketing, you'd have a huge hurdle. And later on, we've read some stories where, you know, different country immigration may direct certain types of immigrants to different areas. You know, we've read about that after the fact kind of deal. So Toronto was my destination, and that's where I arrived.
And you brought your company with you?
Yes, the company was just a one-person deal, me.
Oh, okay. So pretty easy then.
Not. You know what? You're coming from a third world country to a first world country. They had technology in Canada that I'd never seen. I'd never heard of. Multimedia was already hitting the market in 87. And I was coming from black and white and old cameras and old film. You know, it was. So I did. I sent out, I think, maybe 200-300 resumes to any and every possible advertising agency, marketing company. Didn't get it.
And none of the 200. No one called you back?
No. And I'm pretty sure you just see where you came from. And the portfolio was really very basic. I look at it now and I knew then, oh, geez, I'm out of my element here. So my option would be to go back to school and learn in a first world country because there's a huge divide between the third world and first world countries. And I'd never traveled to a first world. Heck, I didn't even know. I'd never seen an escalator. I'd never seen a vending machine. I'd never seen, everything Canada had. So I was working on I arrived on a Sunday night and I was working Thursday morning. I didn't have any money.
Working as in?
I was sorting mail at the back of a bank.
Oh, okay.
Just to get a job.
Right, to have money to put food on the table.
And that was it was a tough year. It was a very tough year. I was shocked, like, you know, cost of bread. My total worth was $500. And I thought that was worth 5 years of wages in a third world country.
Oh, so, okay, that's...
Even today, $500 in a third world country is huge money.
So is that kind of like the debate came back in your head? Like you have this much money potentially head back? Or were you staying?
I came on a
one-way
ticket because...
There was no plan to go back regardless.
I knew I was going to do it. I had the passion to make my own life.
So then you started that with the mail. Then you said that lasted a year?
The mailroom job was temporary through a temp agency. Mm. And ultimately, I came in March. I worked up until August when I was desperate. I was working in mailrooms through the temp agency in the banks. And there was a... I made contact. I told you I used to lead some tours. I was a safari guide. Well, there was a company that used to send a lot of customers from Toronto to Nairobi, and I had met their executive manager, however.
Boss.
I made the phone call, and she said, oh, where are you calling from, Nandita? And I said, I'm in Toronto. She said, hey, this is awesome. Come see me. So I went, and it was on Yonge Street by Hayden, And so I went to see her, and she said, I'm leaving for Nairobi.
Oh.
Can you help me at the office here while I'm gone? And when I come back, we'll talk. By then, I knew there was no chance of marketing advertising. It wasn't happening. And sorting mail was not going to net me much money. So I took that position. And 2 weeks or 3 weeks she was away, I managed her office for her while she was gone. And of course, sales were up because I, with a passion, knew India and Africa. I had done so much safari and knowledge of India because my dad was in the army. I traveled everywhere in India, from the Himalayas down to the bottom of the country, everywhere. We moved every 9 months with my father's army job. So she then made me an offer to stay with her. But as it turned out, while she was away, I'd been speaking to a new startup, and they were going to be taking adventure to a new level by taking tours like kayaking in Bermuda, cycling in China, Mount Everest tours, things like that. And it was an Australian company starting a Canadian branch, and they were dealing with the company that I was temping at in travel. And he knew the manager that I was working with, and he asked me, can you come see me? And I said, sure. I went to see him, and he said, when is she back? I told him. He said, I want to make you an offer. Have you made a commitment with them? And I said, no, I haven't made a commitment. And so when she comes back, we can talk. They talked first, and he made an offer. She said, no, I can't afford to keep her full-time if I'm here, but I can offer her part-time. You're starting up. You need somebody there. Make an offer, take her. And that's where I went. And so then I was with him 2 years, and then I went to work for another travel company for 2 years. And then my last stint was at a senior level for a corporate travel company. And then when I left there, my husband and I started a new business. That's my fifth generation Canadian husband who I met in all of this time frame. And I used to go to night school. I went to Ryerson for business.
While you were doing this?
Yeah, while I was working, I started night school under continuing education in business administration. I used to be in school 6 to 9.
Ooh, to learn the technology?
Well, I decided, yeah, no option. Third world education is great. Knowledge is there, but you don't understand the market. You don't understand business in a first world.
Right, because it's a different
world. It's a whole different world. So you may be able to do your math. You may have, lots of literature.
Math is universal. Communication's universal. It's the process of how it's delivered.
Correct. So then Ryerson was my night, and that I was going to night school for several years till I finished that program.
So you went through those different, you did travel agencies for years and years and years.
Then 6 years, and then we started our own business, my husband and I.
And what'd you start?
He's a retired now, but he was a very senior level human resource professional. And we ended up forming a company that was screening people for jobs in Canada and the United States. And it was all done over the phone. 3 languages, French, English, and Spanish. And high success, and that's how we retired to this area. We loved it. It was all in the concept of screening for jobs. It was behavioral-based interviewing, and it was North America-wide. Like, we had clients like Sobeys, Home Hardware, Sofitel Hotels. We worked with Marine Atlantic out of Newfoundland, coast to coast, Canada, USA.
So you got you made an HR firm with your husband. It was very successful, and I'm assuming you stuck with that success as long as possible, but what then drove you to this tiny town?
I'll tell you that story.
Oh, please.
My husband's family all were in the Niagara region, Stony Creek, etc., and then Font Hill. We were looking for a second home, a cottage. We lived in downtown Toronto, right at Yonge and Bloor, penthouse suite, and business was in the same area. So we were working 7 days a week and putting in easily 12, 14, 16 hours a day. We had 25 full-time employees, so we needed to get away. We were going to burn out. So we started looking for a property down the Grand River, Niagara region, so we could visit with family. And pricing. What we could afford, we hated. What we liked, we couldn't afford. And by some fluke, one December, I found this property, and it said close to Sturgeon Falls. So I called the agent our real estate agent. She says, oh, yeah, Sturgeon Falls is just north of Toronto. She said, my brother lives there. I think she mixed it up with something in the Muskokas that has a similar name.
Right.
And I'll fast forward. We said no. Then we second guessed. My husband and I are really adventurous, and we've done awesome things, kayaked in Bermuda, done all kinds of things. We went sea kayaking. Anyway, we came up that December, looked at the property, and fell in love with the land. Spoke to his parents. His father, wise man, said, it's your life. It's not going to hurt us. And we said, but it's 900 kilometers in the wrong direction. And they said, that's okay. If you love it, buy it. That's what happened. So we bought it. We were going to use it as a cottage. We had a manager at our business so they could look after it. We'd make a long weekend out of it every few months, Friday through back on Monday. After two or three trips, I'd be in tears every Monday. I don't want to leave. We'd be calling our manager saying, can you handle it another day? We'll come in tomorrow. And then at some point, we started exploring the concept. Close down Toronto, move north.
Were you going to close up shop or just leave it for somebody else to run?
Well, we continued it here.
Okay.
No, we decided to move the downsize, and we moved it up here. We did hire somebody to who did our interviews in Spanish and French. And my husband and I, and we kept it going till he retired in 2009.
And then just let it dissolve?
We let it dissolve. We had a buyer from the United States, and it would have been a good deal, but our software was patented, proprietary. Mm. It was DOS-based, and they wanted us to convert to Windows. Our tech guy, who's still around in Toronto, very successful with IVR technology, which is the interactive voice response that we were using, he said, I'll do anything but Windows. I hate Windows. And I hated Windows. It was like, no way. So we decided, you know what? Just let it go. What is meant to be will be. Yeah. And so that's how we moved up here. And then we've been here 16 years now. In 2009, we let that company go. Husband retired. I decided I was going to go work part-time. And somehow my paths crossed with Literacy Alliance in 2010.
It was already established before you arrived?
Literacy Alliance has been in the community since 1990.
Holy jumpins, really?
Yeah. It was incorporated in June 91. I took over 9 years ago.
And you weren't ready to retire? You just needed something to do?
I was planning part-time, and then this opportunity happened, and I decided, okay, 3 to 5 years, I'll hang in there. It went through a really bad time, and it was a downtime for the agency, so much so there was possibility of closure in 2010. And then I never knew there were literacy issues in Canada after being here so long. And when I found out, it was like, wow. Especially me, coming from a third world country where my grandmothers barely read, never went to school. And here we are in this first world country and we have literacy and numeracy issues and people having difficulty comprehending things. So I got involved with Literacy Alliance in March of 2011. I'm still there.
And I was going to say, you said 3 to 5 years, see what happens.
Well, we've grown in beautiful ways. We've had so much support in this community, and Literacy Alliance of West Nipissing probably has been the best thing for my growth as a human being, because my vision switched from money-making and for-profit and turning around companies.
Success.
Success as in growth and,
right.
Having shareholders and paying out dividends and all of this. To a charity, my first and only charity that I work for is Literacy Alliance and a not-for-profit. And the success has come from other human beings achieving their goals. And so it's probably made me a softer human being, a better human being. And I always say, I think this was meant to be, that last act before you kind of go back under the rock you came out of, you know. And it's been awesome. It's a great journey of success for the agency.
And we're lucky to have you. You are fantastic. You are a delight.
I'll
sum it up. You are a delight.
Awesome.
And now, speaking of growth, I think we'll wrap this up with this book that you've graciously gifted me that I actually haven't had a chance to read.
Well, a lot of what we talked about, you'll read in there. The book is now 4 years old, so it's pretty much history paper, right? 4 years is done. It came about from the fact that I'm a passionate gardener.
Oh, yeah, we should probably say it's called Okay to Cry in the Garden.
From Bankruptcy to Paradise. So it's, again, the turnarounds of life, right? We did have, anyway, anyone who wants to read it, the story is there. I've been also very involved in the gardening community of West Nipissing and then Nipissing District and then Sudbury down to Parry Sound. I used to write for The Nugget, a column called Northern Vegetables, with the passion of converting non-gardeners into gardening, because I said, if I can do it, anybody can do it, because I've never gardened before. And so that's how the book came about. Was I used to do speaking engagements in the horticultural societies, and they'd always ask the same question, where did you come from? Where did you learn to garden? Trial and error. And that's when, you should write a book, you should write a book, you should write a book. And so somewhere along the line, my husband and I said, okay, let's do the book. And that's how the book came about.
So it was just a way to kind of collect all your thoughts and
just put them out there. And there's just little stories that are all part of living in the north. And I think it's neat because we came from downtown Toronto, straight up to little town of Field. Population 600 and change. We had more people in the apartment building. It was 20 floors. You can imagine how many people lived in the condo building compared to little old town. So long and short of the story is, yeah, that's how pots got organized. We wrote a book. I've been playing with another book, and it's been difficult getting the thoughts cleared up because the stories are so meshed up with Literacy Alliance suddenly. So it goes from gardening to real life to ups and downs, health, but crossroads, age. Both my husband and I are aging fast, and you suddenly start to see life with a different perspective because energy levels go down, mobility levels go down. Things you were so passionate about 30 years ago are like, really, 30 years ago? It's hard to believe.
Yeah, I guess what you're trying to create is a memoir of sorts, just a collection of where you were and where you came.
And empty your mind so new thoughts can come in.
Well, I think that is all the time we have, but you are truly a fascinating person, Nandita. Thank you so much for sharing your story with us.
Thank you, Drew, for having me here today.